Is the learning in your school competency-based? Is it personalized? Is it happening anytime, anywhere? Is it student-owned? In other words, is the learning student-centered? And are all students learning more deeply, more equitably, and becoming career and college ready? If you have these questions, want to know what the research says about them, and are trying to figure out how to implement these ideas in your classrooms and schools, you've come to the right place. Thank you for listening to the Student-Centered Learning Podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Barriff, and I've been a principal and teacher in student-centered schools for over 17 years, and I can't wait to share a story or interview that will help you help your students. On this episode of the pod, Patrick Kavanaugh, philosophy and academic resource teacher in Providence, Rhode Island, conducts a guest interview as part of his work for a graduate course I teach called Student-Centered Learning in Urban Schools at Providence College. Patrick interviews Omar Valerio, an advisor at the Met School in Providence, and his student, high school sophomore Julian Morfa, about how to support students as they transition from a traditional to a student-centered classroom. They conducted the interview right after Julian completed his end-of-the-year exhibition. Enjoy the interview.
My name is Patrick Kavanaugh, and I'm sitting here with Omar Valerio and Julian Morfa. I'm here to discuss with you guys what you think the best strategies and supports are for students as they transition from a traditional centered classroom to a student-centered one. And so, Omar, I want to get started with you. Could you tell us a little bit about your role at the Met currently?
Sure, yeah. So I came into the Met as a learning specialist. This is when I would work with students who had difficulties with reading and also just, you know, executive functioning skills deficit, not getting work in on time and scheduling. I work with them to try to bridge those gaps between where they are and trying to get that stuff done. I then moved on. I had the opportunity to move into the advisor role. That role is where I work with students as more of a manager than a teacher to try to get them to their goals. So we come together, decide what their goals are for that trimester, and then we, as a team, decide how we're gonna get there. That's me, student, and also their mentor at their internship site. So my students twice a week are out on internships. The other 3 days they're with me working on project work, literacy, QR being math, and any personal projects that they like.
Actually, Julian, I'm going to turn to you. How different is the role that Omar plays as an advisor from your experience in middle school with a more traditional setting?
Well, the advisor role was more like a friend or like a shoulder to lean on. I feel that he would just be there for us emotionally and like academically, personally, in like a lot of different ways. In traditional school, it's more just like, I'm going to teach you the subject and you go learn it by yourself. Mm. Or you try to learn it at home by yourself.
Did you find yourself struggling when you entered into the Met with that change and that transition and trying to figure out how to navigate the new system?
Well, at first it was like hard to adjust to the change, but as time went on, we started getting more and more used to it. We got all these other advisors and like learning specialists, and they help you like get adjusted to it. So that was a big help for me. I feel like that was just pretty much the only thing that kept me like going and knowing what I had to do.
So in your mind, it was the supports in place already here in terms of the people, the resources as people, that enabled you to understand what was being asked of you and to begin that process of goal setting?
Yeah.
And how important and influential has this kind of new approach been for you, this goal setting approach?
It's been influential because like he doesn't let you slack. He doesn't allow you to, well, even if you do demotivate yourself, he brings you back up and puts you in a point where you feel like you can do more for yourself and your advisory. And I feel like that's a big help for us. And I feel like he just doesn't allow it to get to that point. So it's just like you're always at an average level where you want to be, where he wants you to be, where he wants you to be. And then you exceed higher. And usually you come down sometimes, but you always get up.
So you're constantly trying to push yourself, and you know that there are people in play here who are also pushing you.
Yeah.
Omar, I'm going to turn to you. Could you speak to a specific strategy that you've come across or been exposed to that you think works really well in helping students in this transition from the traditional to a student-centered classroom?
So some structures and some tools that we try to use to help our students transition really is to give them a rubric. I know for me, having that solid piece of tangibleness really helps understand what needs to be done. And really teaching the system. So we use our real world rubric as a resource, and that really goes in depth outlining exactly what we're looking for. So an example is like professionalism. That's gonna be different for each student, but it still provides us with structure. You need to be professional. Another one is workplace knowledge and skill development. So once again, that could be very different for each student. However, it gives some universalness to what we're doing and lets me know and lets the student know what is being expected. So as a resource, I would definitely say the real world learning rubric and having that structure.
Would you say that the rubric itself is an element that was supporting you throughout your process of innovation here, aligned with the teacher's assistance and guidance and kind of support? Or was the rubric for you just something that you had to kind of think about and do?
Well, at first it was something that I just kind of had to do, like, understand more. But as time went on, like, the help that the teachers gave me and the support the advisors gave me, it would just be bigger and better. And the rubric kind of just became something that I could go by. Like he said, the professionalism, the workplace knowledge and skill development, it all just kind of, like, tied into one big structure that I could go by. And it just all helped me better myself.
So you came to understand the relationship between the support they were offering you and the organizational structure of the rubric.
Yeah.
I have a couple things to add too. I know for a lot of students, when they first come in ninth grade, it's so difficult because it's a new system. You're going into something completely foreign. It's the first time you've ever done it. Of course, it's going to be difficult. Once these students understand our culture and understand how to work in the system, is just like anything else. It makes sense. And really, the culture is so inviting. And I think what's awesome and unique about us is that we really center around one student at a time. So for instance, Julian, I meet with him for a little bit, find out what his interests are, how can I push him and pull from him? And we use that to really move forward with our learning. So even the rubric is so important, but really, getting to know the student and how to push them and do that stuff is really, you know, what works in this type of system. It's that relationship. Some of the struggles that I see my students going through, I think truthfully at the core of what other schools are going through too. Students in high school, a big issue, taking initiative and being reflective. Those are things that all across the board are issues. However, in our system, those things are really out in the open because we really have our students. They need to be very reflective and they need to take initiative. So those are the skills that a lot of students don't have, but we really want to enforce and build. So because of that, they're really out in the open and are really easy to see when they're not there.
Could you speak to maybe an element of the rubric that you feel is an essential component and piece to that initiative building,
yeah,
that risk taking and innovation?
For me, it's professionalism, definitely. I know there's a lot of students, they may have an internship that they don't necessarily love, but there's those soft skills that can then take them to the next level. For instance, there's a lot of kids that come in who've never talked to an adult. So the fact that we're pushing them to make those calls, to set up interviews with real adults and going through that for me goes a long way. And those are the reasons why our students are so successful outside of school. It makes me proud to be in a system like this.
Julian, could you speak to that element of professionalism in the context of your rubric and how that played a role in your exhibition or your internship experience?
Like he said, the speaking to adults out of school, making calls, that's something that we don't really learn in traditional schools or in life. You have to learn it by yourself. And that's something the Met and our advisors do a lot, is teach us how to go out and speak to adults and gain the confidence to, like, just grow and know what we're gonna say and what we're gonna do.
Another resource that I really wanna shed light to, because this is really important to what we do, is the mentor. These students are going out doing engineering, being art teachers, doctors. These are clearly professions that I'm not in, so I really rely on my mentors to really guide their education and build a plan. So once again, if my student wants to be an engineer, we'll go find an engineer. Okay, what can they now learn? What kind of plan can we put now?
You worked with an engineer this past trimester. Mm-hmm. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Going into it, he would at first he showed us how to use the tools, how engineering plays into other careers like architecture, even business and management. His main deal was to teach us what we want to be and how we can achieve it and how we can even take initiative by ourselves to get what we want out of our internships or out of our mentors himself.
So he's kind of like a model for you guys and they show you a path.
Yeah.
That mentor taking a mentee under their wing to really mold them, it really goes back to our motto and our mission, one student at a time. Mm-hmm. The real world is not who's top, who's the lowest. It's about where you are and how you can grow.
Just to recap, we're talking about the transition of a student going from a traditional setting to a student-centered learning classroom. We're talking about some strategies in place here at the Met that benefit those students moving into that transition. And what it sounds like to me is the relationship of the advisor and the student is essential. The relationship of the mentor and providing a mentor that shows a path is also essential. And the teaching component and strategy that is essential to helping the student, encouraging the student in this process, is that rubric. And one component of that rubric that you feel is essential is the element of professionalism.
Yes.
Okay, and now Omar, would you be willing to share any resources or books or podcasts that you've come across that you'd be willing to share with the listeners that would maybe speak to some of these strategies and tools?
Sure. I would say come to the Met, check us out, look at our Real World Learning rubric. Even any kind of rubric that's self-driven, that has a self-plan, self-preservation and self-growth, is really something that I think would be beneficial.
Julian Morfa and Omar Valerio, thank you so much for meeting with me. Julian, thank you for allowing me to see your exhibition. I was really impressed, and I wish you the best. And Omar, can't wait to see you again
soon. Most definitely.
Thanks for doing what you guys do.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you again for listening to the Student Centered Learning Podcast. Let us know what you think about this episode or what you tried in your school by commenting on our Facebook page. You can also subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher, and please leave a rating so others can find us. You can also follow us on Twitter at STUCNTR Podcast. And remember, students learn deeply when they are at the center.